It's almost 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 23 degrees under sunny skies. We're looking for a high near 31 today. West wind to 45 miles per hour. Should decrease to 35 miles per hour this afternoon. It's blustery. Some blowing snow out there. Increasing clouds for tonight with a low around 20. West wind should become light and variable after midnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Coast Guard's Scandies Rose hearing started this morning. Golden Valley Electric Association is asking for proposals on renewable energy sources. And the Tanana Chiefs Conference in the University of Alaska is doing some drone research. Wildfires. Dillingham schools are open to in-person classes as of today. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The United States is nearing another difficult marker in the coronavirus pandemic, inching closer to 500,000 deaths from COVID-19 since the start of the pandemic. President Biden's nominee for Attorney General Merrick Garland is on Capitol Hill today for his confirmation hearing. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports Garland says if confirmed, he will focus on civil rights and combating domestic terrorism.
Testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Merrick Garland says ensuring that the law is fairly and faithfully enforced will be a priority for him as Attorney General.
The President nominates the Attorney General to be the lawyer, not for any individual, but for the people of the United States.
Garland says that if he is confirmed, he will focus on civil rights, combating domestic terrorism, and protecting the Justice Department's integrity and independence. He assured lawmakers that prosecutorial decisions will be made free of partisan political influence. Both Democrats and Republicans have welcomed Garland's nomination, and he is expected to win confirmation with bipartisan support. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Nearly 9 million people in Texas are still dealing with water disruptions after last week's stretch of historically cold weather that sent energy demand soaring, pushed the power grid to the brink, and triggered rolling blackouts. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick vows the state will fix it.
We need to be sure we make the investment to winterize our reliable energy. So if we have another storm like this, they don't go down because it's frozen.
President Biden says more extreme weather events, such as the ones we've seen in the past week, are likely because of climate change. Former President Donald Trump's legal appeals have run out, and he will finally have to turn over his tax returns to the Manhattan District Attorney. From member station WNYC, Andrea Bernstein has more.
Manhattan DA Cyrus Vance Jr. has been seeking to examine the documents since August of 2019 as part of a wide-ranging investigation into possible criminal fraud by Trump, his associates, or his business. Trump sued to prevent his accountants from turning over the documents, and though he kept losing, he kept appealing. Last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that a president has to turn over evidence like anyone else. After losing again in the lower courts, Trump tried to get the Supreme Court to stop Vance from enforcing his subpoena. On Monday, the High Court denied that request. If Vance decides he has evidence to charge a crime, an indictment could come this year. For NPR News, I'm Andrea Bernstein in New York.
The MyPillow guy is apparently not losing sleep over a $1.3 billion lawsuit Dominion Voting Systems filed today. Mike Lindell says he's glad about it and believes he'll be vindicated. Dominion Voting accuses Lindell of ignoring repeated warnings to stop spreading then-President Trump's baseless claims about election fraud and Dominion's alleged involvement. Dominion's filed similar suits against lawyers Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell. The Dow ends the day up 27 points. This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Scandies Rose hearing, run by the Coast Guard, began today with an introduction by the Coast Guard and a rundown of facts about the fishing vessel Scandies Rose. They also presented the Mayday call and side scan imaging of the final resting place of the 130-foot grabber. This was followed by a moment of silence. Dan Mattson was then called to give testimony as the owner of the Scandies Rose. He was questioned on the ownership and corporate structure, the state of repair of the vessel, maintenance, and his relevant experience as a longtime fisherman, particularly while fishing nearby on the night of the tragedy. Those questions focused on the history of maintenance and repair on the Scandies Rose and the reports of relevant inspections, which seemed to indicate that the Scandies Rose was in good condition. One document logging emergency drills was dated for the evening of the tragedy. Officials say it indicates the crew reviewed immersion suits, radio distress call procedures, and abandoning ship procedures mere hours before the sinking. The board is expected to hear more testimony this afternoon. Golden Valley Electric Association is asking for proposals on how the utility could generate more electricity with renewable energy sources like wind and solar. The goal is to reduce the Golden Valley's greenhouse gas emissions without affecting its ability to produce electricity reliably and with few blackouts, and to do all that with minimum impact on ratepayers' monthly bills. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Golden Valley generates nearly 90% of its electricity with diesel, coal, and other fossil fuels. But now the utility is exploring cleaner and greener ways to generate power with renewable energy sources like wind and solar.
We recognize that the CO2 emissions are problematic in our environment, and that we want to make sure that we do everything we can to reduce those.
That's former Golden Valley President and CEO Corey Borgeson talking 2 years ago about the carbon reduction goal the utility's board of directors had just adopted. That was one of several objectives in a 2018 plan that also included a study of the utility's aging Healy 1 power plant and what to do about it when it reaches the end of its useful life. Those are among the top reasons that Golden Valley last month issued an invitation for proposals on electrical generating facilities powered by renewable energy sources.
One of our strategic objectives this year is to work on a generation plan and what the future generation is going to look like.
Golden Valley's Acting Member Services Director Abby Dillard says the request for information or RFI that calls for renewable power proposals requires the systems to contribute to the utility's carbon reduction goal while complying with its longtime imperative to produce electricity reliably and at the lowest possible cost.
We are very interested in renewable projects as long as the cost makes sense for our members.
The RFI calls for proposals on renewable power facilities that would produce 15 to 30 megawatts, for which Golden Valley will pay 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Golden Valley senior engineer Nathan Minima says soliciting renewable energy proposals could help the utility realize new ways to generate power cost effectively with few or no emissions.
So that we could, you know, evaluate different proposals and see which one would be most beneficial to us, and also kind of open the door to see what other options may be out there.
Minima says some of those ideas could be integrated into the power generation plan that the 2018 strategic directives also called for. That plan will, among other things, consider whether Golden Valley should upgrade the 54-year-old Healy 1 power plant with costly emission controls, including a selective catalytic reduction unit, or SCR, or shut down the 25-megawatt coal-fired power plant and replace it with another power source. Dillard says the utilities board must make that decision next year.
By the end of 2022, we would need to notify whether we are going to elect to retire Healy Unit 1 or install an SCR. And then if we were planning to retire, we would need to shut down the plant by December 31st, 2024.
Minima says the renewable power systems that Golden Valley will be considering wouldn't replace Healy 1, but he says the new power source would augment Golden Valley's mix of electrical generating facilities.
We're going to be considering those projects in light of our generation strategic planning, and that includes Healy 1 retirement. That includes potential capital upgrades on existing generation units.
Dillard says the renewable power proposals must be submitted to Golden Valley no later than April 30th, and she says the RFI requires the system the utility selects to be operational by 2025. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Dillingham's schools are open to in-person classes today. This follows a 2.5-week stint of remote learning after people at the school were potentially exposed to COVID-19. Superintendent Jason Johnson says the district based its decision to hold in-person classes on its COVID-19 mitigation plan and discussions with the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation.
Been reviewing that plan with the Health Corporation throughout the week. The case numbers had dropped to a point to where it made sense to have our students back.
Since the beginning of the month, 19 Dillingham residents have tested positive for the disease. That's the most resident cases the community has seen in a 2-week period since the pandemic began. But the results of mass testing events for students and staff of the school showed only 2 of the roughly 350 people tested positive for COVID-19. Johnson says this shows that mitigation strategies of the school and the community are working. That success also opens the possibility to have students in the classroom throughout the year, even if someone at the school is exposed to COVID-19.
I think there's an opportunity that we can do a different type of a closure, like a more targeted closure, to where maybe only a classroom or one building may be closed and that the district could still continue to operate, even if there were to be a positive case on site.
The pandemic has been difficult for many people in education, from parents to teachers to students. When asked what he looked forward to most, Johnson didn't hesitate.
Just excitement. Teachers work in education because they want to be around kids. We feel strongly that this is the best place for our kids, and we do not believe that virtual education is a great option for most of our students.
Dillingham schools have bounced in and out of in-person learning this year. They opened for 2 months in the fall before they switched to remote learning in mid-November due to a rise in cases. In January, the schools returned to in-person classes for just over 2 weeks before the most recent closure. Heading into spring, Johnson says the district will continue to work with the Health Corporation and hopes to have students in the buildings much more frequently throughout the year. Research conducted by the Tanana Chiefs Conference and the University of Alaska Fairbanks demonstrates the value of small, unmanned aircraft to monitor wildfire impacts and other environmental change in rural Alaska. KUAC's Mary Auld has this report.
It's more important than ever for communities to understand wildfire behavior as climate change alters fire patterns across the state. Small unmanned aircrafts or drones could help.
It's a very rapid assessment tool. It's cost effective. And I guess the other reason that I like the idea of using it is because it's something that even rural communities in Alaska could probably apply themselves.
That's Todd Brinkman, an associate professor of wildlife biology at UAF who worked on the project. TCC officials worked with researchers at UAF to decide what information the drones would gather. One priority was assessing the efficacy of fire breaks, areas where forest managers have thinned vegetation to protect communities from fire. Foresters at Tanana Chiefs Conference wanted to see whether those breaks would still protect communities from wildfire damage. They used drones to monitor fire breaks in Dot Lake, Tanacross, and Tetlin. In the past, foresters on the ground have assessed vegetation on foot to determine whether it will effectively curb the spread of wildfire.
It's very tedious.
That's where drones come in. The aircraft gathered accurate information about the fire breaks and required far less time and manpower than observing on the ground. Natural resource managers also use drones to monitor the way wildfires are impacting Chinook salmon in the Yukon River. Brinkman says resource managers in rural communities can get licensed to fly the drones so they can do the monitoring independently without the support of UAF. Once local land managers have the equipment and skills necessary to gather data by drone, they can use them on far more projects than just monitoring wildfire impacts. Communities could monitor erosion or permafrost thaw or forest makeup using drones.
I don't think this technology is going to go away. I think it will continue to expand and people get more familiar with it and they'll apply it to answer all sorts of questions.
For KUAC, I'm Mary Auld.
Federal aviation safety investigators have closed the book on the fatal Guardian flight crash in 2019 that killed 3 crew members. The twin-engine medevac plane was en route to the southeast village of Cake to pick up a patient on the evening of January 29th, 2019. But during its approach over Frederick Sound, the turboprop inexplicably veered to the right and plummeted more than 2,500 feet in just 14 seconds. A final report released by the National Transportation Safety Board says there isn't enough evidence to explain how or why. Most of the wreckage of the King Air 200 was recovered in about 500 feet of water. The bodies of the Juneau-based crew members were never found. That's after an extensive effort by the U.S. Coast Guard and private contractors.
This one was a little bit frustrating for us. It's not for the lack of trying, but unfortunately, it didn't give us any definitive answers of exactly what happened.
Clint Johnson is the NTSB's lead investigator in Alaska. He says there was initial hope when the cockpit voice recorder was found.
We were definitely hoping that we were going to be able to glean some information as far as what happened in those last final moments with that cockpit voice recorder. Unfortunately, it did not help us at all.
The recorder hadn't worked since 2015. The three killed were 63-year-old pilot Patrick Coyle, 43-year-old paramedic Margaret Langston, and 30-year-old nurse Stacy Ray Morse. Morse was more than 6 months pregnant at the time. Her fiancé filed a wrongful death suit against the Utah-based medevac company and the plane manufacturer a few days before the two-year anniversary. The Alaska State Troopers have released the names of the law enforcement personnel involved in the shooting in Dillingham on Thursday. Three troopers fired their guns, Aaron Mobley, Adam Jackson, and Benjamin Turner. Mobley has worked as a trooper for 17 years, Jackson and Turner for two. Two Dillingham police officers responded to the incident. One, Daniel Gonzalez Fawcett, fired his gun. He has worked with the Dillingham Police Department for 3 months and has 4 years' experience in law enforcement in other parts of the state. Shortly before noon on Thursday, Dillingham police were told that a vehicle was in a ditch by the road, according to a trooper dispatch report. Dillingham police asked state troopers for help at 12:21 p.m. When Dillingham police dispatch contacted the driver, the person told dispatch he had a rifle and ammunition. Dillingham police and state troopers arrived on the scene. At 12:31 p.m., troopers reported that shots were fired. Police and troopers exchanged gunfire with the person before they retreated to a safe distance and set up a perimeter near the vehicle. The driver was taken into custody about 5:30 p.m. They are receiving medical treatment at a hospital in the Anchorage area. A 233-foot floating processor owned by Trident Seafoods caught fire shortly before midnight last Wednesday. The processor, the Aleutian Falcon, was docked at the port of Tacoma in Washington. Trident said the vessel is a total loss, according to multiple news outlets. The Aleutian Falcon is one of Trident's two floating processors that operate in Alaska. According to the company's website, the processors follow herring from southeast Alaska to Bristol Bay, then operate in salmon fisheries throughout the summer. It can support 120 crew members. The Coast Guard said in a news release that the vessel is still burning as of 2 p.m. Thursday. So far, no one's been injured. Tacoma Fire Department reported the fire. The department used water to fight the blaze from the pier and from three other boats. In an update on Twitter, the department said the hull of the vessel is still sound and it's working with Trident to start removing water to prevent it from sinking. The ship also held ammonia, which is used to chill fish. The fire department said in its update the ammonia tanks were of great concern, but they had been continuously cooled and are intact. The Trident has also faced a number of challenges since the start of the year. A large COVID-19 outbreak at its huge processing plant in a remote Aleutian island of Akitan has infected more than a third of its workforce and forced the plant to shut down in January 22nd, just as the lucrative winter fishing season kicked off. Just a week later, the virus hit another of the fishing giant's processing plants, this time aboard one of the corporation's massive factory trawlers, the Island Enterprise, as it was arriving in Dutch Harbor.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way. 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Jerky made from Alaska pollock gets some big backers. More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers, simplify your sales online from one location at the Seafood Auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
Whitefish jerky made from Alaska pollock attracted the attention of big backers starting at a buffet table at Fish 2.0, a global gathering of innovators and investors hosted by Stanford University to grow the sustainable seafood sector.
It was literally the first major set of samples that we'd ever made of the product, and it was a pretty amazing moment. There was oysters on the half shell and platters of cheese and all this delicious food, and the jerky was gone before anything else. And I thought, okay, you know, we're actually onto something.
Nick Mendoza, co-founder and CEO of Neptune, is a former marine scientist turned jerky maker near Seattle. The small company started out in 2018 with West Coast Rockfish and has since spawned a partnership with American Seafoods Company and industry trade powerhouse Genuine Alaska Pollock Producers.
What really sold us on the story of wild Alaska pollock is what an amazing, regenerative, abundant food source it is and what a large-scale fishery it is that operates sustainably at a large scale. And I think that's a great story to tell.
Mendoza says Neptune wants to become the flagship brand for sustainable seafood snacks.
It's inspiring both as a founder in this space, but also just as someone who cares about the future of seafood in our oceans, that not only is seafood consumption in general seem to be on the rise, but this awareness and this sort of renaissance in making sure that it is coming from a good source and understanding what that purchase is actually supporting when you're buying fish.
The Neptune Whitefish Jerky comes in four flavors and has great reviews on Amazon. Most say it's not fishy, and the texture is similar to beef products. The jerky is also available online and at about 70 retail stores. Use the code NEPTUNEJERKY20 for a 20% discount. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Here's your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 22nd day of February, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:21 this morning. It won't set again until 6:27 p.m., giving us 10 hours and 5 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this day was 46, set in 1944, and our record low was minus 1, set in 1995, and we're right in between that, 23 degrees right now here in Kodiak, sunny skies. We're looking for a high near 31. Let's see if we get there. Increasing clouds tonight with a low around 20 tonight. West wind at 25 miles per hour should become light and variable after midnight, but those west winds that are gusting right now to 45 miles per hour should decrease to 35 miles per hour this afternoon sometime. For tomorrow, look for rain before 1 a.m., then rain and snow, low around 32. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 5:16 p.m. That will be a 1.14-foot tide, followed by a high tide right after midnight at 12:11. That will be a 5.71-foot tide. Our low tide for tomorrow morning comes early, 4:28 a.m., 4-foot tide, followed by a high tide later tomorrow morning at 10:43 a.m. of 8.18 feet. Over on the west side, these are Uganic Pass tides. You have a low tide coming up at 5:40 p.m. That's going to be a 2.63-foot tide, followed by a high tide just after noon at 12:15. Just after midnight at 12:15 a.m. of 11 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:39 a.m. of 6.18 feet. And your high tide on the west side will be at 11:23 a.m., 12.52 feet tomorrow. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 993 millibar low 90 nautical miles south of Cordova will move inland this afternoon. Its front will decay along the North Gulf Coast through Tuesday afternoon. Marmot Island is sick, Kanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. We're looking at a gale warning today. West wind to 35 knots right now and seas to 15 feet. For tonight, west 25 knots, seas to 13 feet. And for tomorrow, on the east side, southwest wind to 20 knots, seas to 9 feet. They're looking at Wednesday, west 40, seas 14. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning today and a heavy freezing spray warning today in the Shelikof. West wind to 45 knots right now and seas to 10 feet with heavy freezing spray. For tonight, southwest 25, seas to 5 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow, south winds to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet with freezing spray in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bay, gale warning today in Chiniac Bay. West 35 right now, seas 6 feet with freezing spray in Chiniac Bay. For tomorrow, southwest 15, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, gale warning today, west 40 right now, seas to 8, pardon me, seas to 8 feet with freezing spray. For tomorrow, south winds to 10 knots will increase to 15 knots tomorrow afternoon in Marmot Bay, seas to 3 feet. The Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference is taking their annual conference virtual. Tune in with SWAMC and their partners on March 4th and 5th to hear about everything from mariculture to broadband, COVID impacts to vaccine distribution. Go to swamc.org to register today. That's SWAMC.org. The Island Trails Network Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival is back. Your Kodiak Outdoor Film submissions are due March 5th for the March 12th Kodiak Fairground Drive-In Film Festival. Films can be dropped off on a thumb drive at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Salmon Reception Desk. Contact Philip with questions or to meet you at the door, 486-1871. The Alzheimer's Foundation of America is holding a free virtual conference on Thursday as part of its Educating America tour to provide information about brain health, caregiving, and more to help Alaska residents affected by Alzheimer's disease. Learn more or register for the free virtual Alzheimer's education program by visiting www.alzfdn.org/tour, or you can call them at 866-232-8484. If you are a renter struggling with bills or know someone who would benefit from up to 12 months of financial assistance for rent and utility payments, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is now accepting applications for its rental relief program. The process is easy and confidential. Applications are available online at alaskahousingrelief.org or by calling and texting the word RELIEF, remember that's I before E, toll free to 833-440-0420. Applications will be accepted until 11:59 Friday, March 5th, so that deadline is coming up. You may qualify for Alaska Housing Rent Relief if you rent your home and meet certain income criteria, or if COVID has reduced your income. Attention pregnant mothers or mothers with young children. Has the recent health crisis caused you or your household to be out of work, or have your hours been cut? You may now qualify for WIC services. The WIC program provides assistance with healthy foods, nutrition education, and breastfeeding education and support. The number to call is 907-486-7312, that's 7312, to schedule an appointment. They're now holding over-the-phone appointments for your convenience and safety. You may now qualify, again, 486-7312. The Kodiak Arts Council is thrilled to offer a free program for young artists aged 4 to 8 called Cabin Fever Crafting. Free crafting kits are available in a tote outside the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium every Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Each kit comes complete with everything that's required to make the craft, and each craft has a detailed instruction video to go along with it. There's no need to sign up or do anything other than come to the auditorium and grab a free kit from the tote outside. The companion video can also be accessed at www.kodiakarts.org. For more information, call the Arts Council at 486-5291 or 942-5840.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.